On the 9th of September 2015, Queen Elizabeth II will become the longest-serving monarch in British history. And during her 63 years on the throne, very few have got to know her that well. But there's one body of work that sheds light on her thoughts, personality, and the issues that really concern her. And that's the Queen's own speeches. For many years, of course, the Christmas Address was the most watched programme on television on Christmas Day, and millions still tune in to hear what she has to say. We have our special guest on the show now, Ingrid Seward, who uses the Queen's speeches to provide a revealing insight into the character of the woman who has reigned since the days when Churchill was Prime Minister. Fascinating book, a fascinating subject. Ingrid, good morning.
Good morning.
Wow, where do we begin? Let's begin at the very beginning. The Queen's speeches themselves, an interesting thing to use to write the book. Tell me about the speeches, because I kind of for years thought that she really didn't write them herself and it was all done for her.
Well, most of it, I mean, she makes many speeches a year. I mean, you know, sometimes something like 200 speeches in one year.
Yeah.
But they're all written for her, apart from the Christmas speech.
And right.
What happens is, over the year, her sort of staff gather information, some event that they think would look good or be interesting for the Commonwealth. And then at this time of year at Balmoral, they put all the sort of information into a melting pot, and the Queen goes through it with her private secretary, and they sort of construct the speech. And obviously, by my wildest imagination, she doesn't write every word of it.
Sure.
And you can sometimes see a bit of Prince Philip in there. He is a definite helper because he's a very good writer.
Brilliant. And so you've taken the kind of basis of a lot of these speeches and come out with some very interesting facts that maybe people wouldn't have known about the Queen. Let's go back to her childhood, because obviously it was a childhood very different from most of us. It seems that there was a nanny in her life who kind of had an odd way of dealing with things and believed that to spoil the child was to ruin the adult.
Yes, she had a very strict nanny called Clara Knight. They called her Alla. But she was strict, but she wasn't a cool nanny. She, you know, she was kind, but she was very strict. But then, of course, we are going back. You know, the Queen was born in 1926, so the world was very different then. And
yeah.
Children were definitely, certainly aristocratic children. I think right across the board, children were seen but not heard.
Yes, and she'd be taught how to wave even and smile back then.
Yes. Well, actually, I think Queen Mary, her grandmother, taught her that. She taught her how to wave, you know, that sort of funny wave, like
yes.
You're string on a light bulb. And also, she was taught not to fiddle. Not to fidget, I suppose, is a better word for
yes.
it. And I believe that her pockets were even sewn up so she couldn't put her hands in her pockets.
Oh, bless her! And I believe her reward was a biscuit.
Well, children do like biscuits. They still like biscuits.
Depends on the biscuit, Ingrid, to be honest with you. And she also had somebody else in her life, Bobo, and that was the maid, wasn't it?
Bobo MacDonald was her nursery maid, and she used to sleep in Princess Elizabeth's room, and almost until the time of her marriage.
Mm.
So she's never... One interesting, she's never ever been completely alone.
Yes.
You know how we all like our own space?
Yeah.
She's never really alone. There's always somebody just hovering outside the door or waiting in the next room.
Mm. Yeah, interesting. Tell us about her parents. What were they like?
Well, the parents were, by the standards at the time, were very warm and very loving. And George the VI used to call, when he became king, called it the three of us. So there was him and Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother, as she was known later, and the two princesses, Margaret and Elizabeth. So it was very tight-knit. But they were brought up by nannies. You know, everyone thinks, oh, they were very hands-on parents. But in those days, you know, he was the Duke of York before he became king. They were brought up by nannies.
Yes. The Duke himself was a kind of physically fragile person, wasn't he?
I think physically and quite mentally fragile.
Mm.
But he was a very kind father, and he devised the idea of the Christmas pantomimes at Windsor Castle, because he really worried about his children being sort of shut in that gloomy old castle for the duration of the war. So he thought, we've got to do something to keep them amused. And so he took the children round the castle, and they went hunting for junk, he called it.
Aww.
But it was really, you know, like we all have in our houses, a load of stuff, and you think, well, what can I do with it? Let's use this for the pantomime.
And the war itself, obviously, was important in everybody's lives, but in the Queen's life, the family wanted her to be unblighted by the kind of everyday problems of war.
They did want her to, but she has a very inquisitive mind, and she wanted to know exactly what was going on. And of course, she could hear a lot of the planes going overhead over Windsor Castle. And if there was an air raid, they had to go down to the dungeons. And she cared about evacuees. They used to mix with some of the evacuee children and the children from the local school.
And you mentioned the planes there, and of course she became an expert plane spotter, and I believe she's still quite good at that to this day.
I know, that always makes me laugh, because of course Windsor Castle is absolutely under the root from Heathrow. I mean, if you're trying to do filming or something there, it's a nightmare, because, I mean, literally they come over about every 7 or 8 seconds. So I suppose in the end you don't hear them, but the Queen can actually tell what the plane is, a 747 or
whatever. Fantastic. I heard this wonderful story, and I do hope it's not just an urban myth, that an American tourist was once heard to say how ridiculous that the royal family chose to put Windsor Castle right under the flight path of London Heathrow.
I don't know, but it's a lovely story, isn't it?
It's a great story. Now, her first radio performance was in 1940, and the BBC head of children's broadcasting was very impressed.
He was impressed. I mean, what they wanted, really wanted, it was the children's hour, and they wanted the Queen to talk to children that had been evacuated to North America, really.
Yeah.
And she practiced for days and days her speech. And when she actually came to deliver it, I mean, she's only 14, and it was delivered with incredible professionalism for someone of that age. And the King stood outside the door and said, "Oh, it sounds just like her," which was a great compliment.
Absolutely is for a radio broadcaster. And, of course, she even invented her own catchphrase, "Come on, Margaret."
Well, yes, and she said, "Come on," at the end she said, "Come on, Margaret, join in." And Margaret joined in her little high-pitched voice. And then in America and Canada, that became, "Come on, Margaret," became a catchphrase.
How wonderful is that? Now, surprisingly, when I read this in your book, I couldn't believe it, that the Queen, when she, despite the King's reservation, joined the women's branch of the army, she learned things like how to strip down a car engine, change a wheel, drive a 3-ton ambulance.
Yes, she did. I mean, that was very, very much her getting involved in the war effort as much as she could. Mm. And she's always, she loves driving.
Yeah.
And she's always loved driving, and Prince Philip drives extremely fast, but then so does the Queen. I mean, she's often seen roaring round the estates in a very battered old Land Rover.
I wonder if she'd get out and have a look at the engine if it went wrong.
Oh, she would.
I love that.
She's wonderfully practical.
Love it, love it.
Which is quite strange for someone in that position.
Now, obviously, we must bring in Prince Philip here, and he was encouraged by his uncle, of course, Louis Mountbatten, and was a regular visitor at the royal palaces. They seem to fall in love really quite quickly.
Well, the Princess Elizabeth met Prince Philip at a wedding, because they were cousins, distant cousins. And she really sort of fell in love with him. She's only 13, so I suppose it was more of a crush.
Yeah.
When they went to visit Dartmouth College, everyone says that was the first time they met, but it wasn't actually. And he was told to sort of take the two princesses round by Lord Mountbatten. And, and Prince Philip, I think he was 18 and very handsome.
Mm.
And he started writing to her. Which, I mean, it's just, I mean, a 13-year-old girl and an 18-year-old man. I mean, she obviously had a crush, and he presumably thought, well, why not be friends with this little girl? She's good connection.
Amazing. And then, of course, they get engaged shortly after her 21st birthday. 4 months later, they're married. Their marriage obviously has been, A, enduring, but B, they just seem like they fit.
I think they're very funny together. I mean, Prince Harry has given a couple of interviews in which he said, that my grandparents are very funny together. I think they sort of, that they've been together for so long that they're sort of bounce off each other.
Yes, I get that.
And of course, Prince Philip is, of course, totally, totally supportive of his wife and the institution of the monarchy. So if anyone does anything that he considers damaging to the monarchy, he'll give them a broadside.
Yeah, absolutely.
He certainly did with Diana, and he certainly did with Fergie.
And when they're in their kind of normal life, the members of the public try and imagine what it must be like to be, you know, a member of the royal family. Do they sit there and watch telly like the rest of us?
They do. I mean, I don't know if they watch it like the rest of us. I think the Queen has I know at Balmoral she still has an old-fashioned television.
Really?
They're not a wall-mounted plasma screen. At Buckingham Palace, she did have an old-fashioned telly, but I suspect it might have been upgraded a bit.
How funny.
But they do like Prince Philip and the Queen like EastEnders.
Oh, do they? Oh, I'm disappointed. I thought it might be Coronation Street.
I think it's EastEnders, not Coronation Street.
Oh, dear.
No, definitely EastEnders, because I thought, how bizarre.
Yeah, this is totally bizarre, given it's probably the most miserable programme on television.
Well, everyone's always arguing with each other. I mean, it is quite fascinating, but everybody's arguing all the time.
They're always shouting at each other on EastEnders.
And they're so rude to each other.
Now, obviously, the Queen was an heir presumptive, and she came to the throne after her father's death. A very young queen. Was she very terrified at taking on that role, or was she pretty prepared for it?
She was totally unprepared for it.
Mm.
And she was terrified. Although her father had lung cancer and, you know, he wasn't... you know, he's in very bad health, and people were worried, you know, that he wouldn't live. He'd had a sort of renaissance. You know, sometimes very ill people have a little revival.
Mm.
And I think even a couple of days before, or maybe it was the night before, he'd said to the princess, this is when she was in Kenya, I think he'd heard from her by telegram or something. She'd heard from him, I beg your pardon. And he'd said, I can lift my hand to shoot a gun now. And they were all thought, well, he's getting better.
Mm.
But, of course, he wasn't getting better. He just had a little moment before his death. So when he died, it actually did come as a great shock to her.
Yes. Who broke the news to her?
Prince Philip broke the news to her. They were in Kenya, as I'm sure everyone that follows the royal family knows. And they were at a place called Sanga Lodge, which was a present from the people of Kenya. They'd just been in treetops. When she actually became queen, they were in one of those viewing platforms in the middle of the game area, the game reserve.
Mm-hmm.
They left that, and then they went to Sanga Lodge, and they were resting when the news came through.
Right.
And Prince Philip told her. And they walked up and down, and down by this sort of trout stream.
Hmm, must have been quite a conversation. Well, here we are with a couple of weeks to go before she's the longest-serving monarch in British history. We can't talk about this. I mean, your book is full of interesting stuff, but, of course, the press have as usual, tagged onto the main things like Diana and how the Queen got on with Diana. Is it a case of the Queen really wanting to like Diana, but she just didn't know how to like her or how to help her?
The Queen had known Diana since Diana was a child, because Diana lived on the Sandringham estate.
Yeah.
And Diana's dad was an equerry to the Queen.
Mm.
And she thought the Spencer girls are sort of one of us.
Mm.
You know how you love the idea, perhaps, of your own children marrying, you know, your friend's children.
Yes.
It doesn't often happen, but it's lovely when it does. And so the Queen was thrilled about Diana and had no idea of the inner turmoils that Diana had.
Mm.
So it took a long time, and she was tried her best to help Diana, but the Queen is not very good at emotional confrontation, because she's never had to deal with it.
Yes.
I mean, lots of us aren't. And she'd rather do anything than sit Diana down and say, now tell me, dear, what's wrong?
Mm.
I mean, that's the last sort of thing the Queen would say. So, it would go on way into the badness of the marriage before the Queen really knew that it was in serious trouble, and then it was practically too late.
Yes, and Diana would openly cry in front of her. That must have been an awkward moment if the Queen couldn't deal with that.
I think no one had ever done that to the Queen before, and I think she really didn't know how to deal with it, especially somebody of Diana's age. She just didn't know what to do, and Diana said, everybody hates me, and my husband hates me, and I hate my husband, and the Queen just sort of, no, dear. I think she was just flabbergasted by it all.
Yeah. And what about her relationship with Kate? The gossip mongers would say that she doesn't like Kate either, but that's far from the truth.
Oh, no, that's far from the truth. I think she thinks that Kate is probably the best thing that's happened to the royal family for many a moon.
Mm.
Because Kate comes from a very happy, stable background. The Queen would never even cross her mind to think she, you know, she's an ordinary girl. I mean, she's probably much happier that Prince William married an ordinary girl rather than an earl's daughter like his mother was. You know, and just had a stable upbringing. And also, I think the Middletons have been incredibly cautious and careful.
Yes.
And I think that the Queen is extremely grateful and lucky that William's married a girl like that.
And do you think the young royals have almost saved the royal family in the public's opinion?
No, I think the young royals nearly destroyed the royal family at one stage when they were gallivanting all over the place and doing crazy things and getting involved in mad television shows and diving off yachts and things like that. We like to see all that. But the British don't like their royal family to be seen to be having a good time.
Mm.
They like them to be cold and wet in Scotland. They don't want them in the Mediterranean lurking around on the yachts and things.
Love it. So, the book itself, would this be something you think that your book, the Queen, would read?
I really don't know. I mean, she might glance through it and say, oh, yes, I remember making that speech. Because what I've tried to do is to link, you know, go do it in decades. So this is the speech, you know, so you have the 40s, the 50s, and all the speeches that the Queen made.
Yes.
Link some of them into what happened at the time. So it's a sort of, it's been a knitting together of events that go in with the more interesting speeches.
And if the Queen was unhappy with your book, would she tell you so?
No. So I'll never know that.
Well, let's assume that she is then, Ingrid, shall we? The Queen's Speech, fascinating book. Thank you so much for coming on and talking about it. We could talk for hours.
Great pleasure. Thank you so much.
All the best, Ingrid. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.